This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Good afternoon, good to the world, good evening America, good morning Australia, early morning Austria, or whatever your time zone across this beautiful planet Earth of ours. You're tuned in to the People Speak radio show with Steve Johnson. The People Speak show normally airs every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific and 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS radio network. Anyone can participate during the show with call-in questions for our guests, toll-free in the USA and Canada on 1-888-429-5471. That number again, 1-888-429-5471. Or you can join us live in the government and politics section of PAL Talk, the largest free chat program in the world, where we have a virtual radio room called the People Speak Radio Show that anyone may join to participate during the show. We have a truly wonderful researcher and a dedicated 9/11 truther on the show today. I'm more excited than Donald Rumsfeld on Viagra in a Texas strip club. He's a brave, courageous guy who has lived through some incredible harassment, all brought on because of his passion to speak out loud about the 9/11 fraud and to call for a new investigation. Just as Bill Cooper would be considered the grandfather of 9/11 truth, this man is considered by many to be the godfather of 9/11 truth, having been one of the first to publicly voice his suspicions about what really happened. We're talking tonight to Mr. Jimmy Walter about the sheer impossibility of the official story about 9/11 and his experiences in trying to show others. Welcome to the People Speak show, Mr. Walter, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Glad to be here.
Fantastic to have you, sir. We'll be taking audience questions after the first half hour, but my first question to you, Mr. Walter, is how did you get started in the 9/11 truth quest to find out what really happened?
Well, I actually started with the Iraq War. When they started the run-up to the Iraq War, I started going online, and I found out that everything that Colin Powell was saying was an outright lie. And here we were getting ready to go to war in Iraq. So I started running full-page ads in the New York Times, USA Today, and other newspapers across the small regional newspapers across the United States. The LA Times refused to take my ad and to try to stop this war. I ran the ad on the very day of Powell's trip to the UN to get permission to invade Iraq. Of course, I was ignored. It was very funny. The New York Times reporter, he called General Powell, and asked him, had he heard about my full-page ads in the New York Times? And they said, no, we haven't. And I replied in a follow-up letter, that's very strange. They know for certain that Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction, but they don't know about an ad in the New York Times. So it's been disinformation from the start. Well, I failed, obviously, to stop the Iraq War. And I shut up for a while, but I started going around to various 9/11 events in the country. And in California, I met Eric Hufschmidt, and I got his DVD. And I was sort of just buying it. I didn't really believe other people than the 19 Arabs that had attacked the World Trade Towers. But when I finally got around to watching his DVD, it was an epiphany. I said, oh my God, these people have actually done this. And so I decided, well, I'd see what I could do. Well, in that year, it was September 11th was coming up, and no one in New York City was holding an event. So I decided, well, I'll hold an event. And I went to New York City, and I got in touch with some people from the 9/11 truth.org there, and we put together an event at a hotel down on 34th Street, and we brought in cameras and everything, and I relied pretty much on these guys to help me put together this event. But it seems like they had other agendas. At any rate, I asked them to help me out. And they came up with some stuff that I thought was pretty off the wall. And the night of the event, one of them was in changing the teleprompter and trying to stop one of the guests that I had invited to be on the show.
And that was sabotage.
That was sabotage. Now, second part, I had printed up all of these Chicken Hawk in Chief T-shirts, and I was giving them away for free. And of course, I had come down there and I said, "Here, help me distribute these things for free." And they started selling them and pocketing the money. So I took them back from them and was giving them out the next day in the parade. And I was running around in my Chicken Hawk in Chief uniform that I had made up, complete with patches and text on the thing. And this T-shirt, I gave away 30,000 of them or something. And it actually made it all the way to the Supreme Court. And in a case in New Hampshire, a kid had worn one to school. And because on the T-shirt I had depicted George W. Bush doing cocaine, drugs, and other stuff, he said, "Oh, no, it's about drugs. You can't bring it to school. Well, the local ACLU took it to court, made it all the way to Supreme Court, and of all people, Scalia sided with me and said, you can't stop him from doing this. So at any rate, I had a lot of trouble with those people, and it disappointed me, but this happened a lot of times. I found that people were more interested in making money than they were in getting the truth out. Now, on the other hand, I'm spoiled. I came from a rich family. I had money. And so money wasn't really an object to me to make money on. Quite the opposite. I gave most of my money away trying to do this thing. But at any rate, I ran lots and lots of New York Times advertisements across the country. TV ads and things like that. And I think I was sabotaged at every level.
Wow.
It's the way it is. So
Mr. Walter, what do you say to those people who say, "It's been nearly 15 years, isn't it time that you gave up?" What do you say to those people?
Look around you guys. 9/11 is the cornerstone, the foundation for everything they're doing now. Proof without doubt that the current false flags are indeed not false flags. The takeover of our liberties, I think it's extremely relevant even today, but there's a concept in politics called change the subject. And so they keep changing the subject with Libya, the false flag in England with 7/7, the false flag in Madrid on 3/11. All of these things are thrown out there. And so they keep the people terrorized. Let's flip back to the actual event. The actual event was a psychological coup d'etat. A psychological masterpiece. When people are scared, the blood leaves the thinking part of the brain and goes to the brain stem, the fight and flight part of the brain, and they become much more susceptible to following the leaders and being unquestioned. And so on September 11th, it was like a boxing match. Bam! A plane hits the World Trade Towers. Bam! Another plane hits the World Trade Towers. Bam! A plane hits the Pentagon. Bam! One tower falls. Bam! The second tower falls. Bam! The third tower falls, although Building 7 was never mentioned again after that day. And so the people are punch drunk. They're not thinking. They're saying, "Oh my God, America is under attack. We got to rally around the flag." So this is a cycle, and they don't question it. Well, some do, of course, but the majority don't question it. because to question it would be to help our enemies. And they also have used that theory a lot. Like they've called anybody who's a 911 conspiracy theorist is helping the terrorists. They've had testimony in front of Congress by government agents on that. And it's not uncommon. I've had people say, well, if you don't like it, why don't you leave? How can you help the terrorists like this? I had, when I was protesting outside the New York Times in I think it was November of 2004, people came up and wanted to attack me for doing these things. And also, the New York Times called the police and lied to them about my protest, trying to get me arrested. And I have to give the particular cop that came there credit. He was very even-handed. And he you said, hey, you can't stop him. And then they have these little rules. You've got to be 25 feet from the door and stuff like that. And so I went. But the guard had told him, oh, I'm blocking people from coming in and all this other crap. So the New York Times from the very beginning was not interested in the truth. I had one of the editors come by me and said, well, you know, you can't prove a negative. I'm saying, oh, you can't prove there's not an elephant here on the street. I think I can prove there's not an elephant here on the street. But at any rate, I had, we then did a tour in 2005 of Europe, and I was again sabotaged even by people in my own tour. I don't want to name any names, but at any rate, it just went on and on. I was sabotaged by people I thought were my friends, who had their own agendas again. I also think a lot of people stole from me, but, you know, at this point, there's nothing to be done about it.
You know, one of the first times I ever heard your name was for a free DVD offer called Confronting the Evidence that you personally funded and sent out to anyone in the world who wanted evidence of the American government complicity in this crime. Now, how many DVDs in total did you end up sending out and being in production, and how did that go?
300,000.
Wow.
It's hard to mention, to measure any of this stuff, but I think it's just from the scale of the advertising and the free stuff that I reached a lot of people early on. And for instance, in England, in the UK, I went to a UK meeting, and there were five guys there, and they, of course, were trying to start the thing. But then I came to England with my tour, gave away three DVDs, and I am credited by some, at least, for kicking the movement up into the working level. And right now, England is one of the best September 11th movements in the world. I also kickstarted. I did very well in Amsterdam. I did very well here in Vienna. The rest of the countries I kind of sucked at, but, like I was sabotaged in Spain, guy didn't run the advertising for Willie Rodriguez, and Willie Rodriguez in Spain is like, you know, a hero. So, but anyhow, that's neither here nor there. I can't change that in the past. Talking to people, what I found is that most people don't have enough science or understanding of technical details or even what they see to make decisions. They depend on the talking heads, the gravelly voiced, gray, Walter Cronkite looking type people who tell them, and then they follow what they say. And they don't want to spend the time. What we have is weapons of mass distraction at every level. Sports, fashion, pornography, golf, whatever. People In fact, the Spanish word for entertainment is divertido, to be diverted from thinking about the things you don't want to think about. And I don't have time. I mean, if everybody really believed what I had said, they'd have to give up their soccer mom. Soccer moms would have to start doing something else, the barbecues and the football games. You know, why are we doing this? We've got to go out and do something. But when I look at history, you find that people only revolt over economics and never over anything else. Every revolution was economically based. And so at this point, well, you could go back and look at Occupy Wall Street. Occupy Wall Street, people actually got out and sat and did something all over the world. And that's because they were being hit in the pocketbook. But not really yet. And when that happens, then the people are going to revolt. The current house of cards and false information about how good the economy is and how good the unemployment is, that house, that charade can only last so long. Right now, even Paul Krugman, who of the mainstream economists is the one I favor the most, won't admit the truth that if we're really going to correct the economy, we got to get rid of the Fed, and we have to go to some sort of giveaway of money to people. Because the thing about computerization, the internet, automated factories, I mean, there's a factory in Nuremberg, Germany, that produces Volkswagen and has 5 employees. Everything else
wow.
is robots. I exaggerate a bit, but it's really amazing. You can find it on YouTube, and Volkswagen put out the video itself.
Goodness.
And this is where we're going. Excuse me. McDonald's is computerizing their stores. You check in on the internet at the airlines. You check out at the manless pay station at Kmart. In other stores. Hell, I don't even go to stores very often anymore because it's a waste of time because you don't know what you want is going to be there. I prefer Amazon, much as I hate the idea overall, but it's just far more convenient. And the few times I have to send something back, the cost of that is far, far less than driving my car, risking my life in traffic, et cetera. And so Jeremy Rifkin wrote a book called The End of Work. And he points out all the stuff I've just mentioned. And his solution, of course, is more social programs, which I'm for, too. And it's going to take something like that. Because whereas a top executive might realize that employees are customers, he or she is under the pressure for this quarter's earnings. So firing people to get up the profits is his or her only choice, because if they don't, they'll be replaced by somebody next quarter who will.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of like the frog and the scorpion. At the crossing the river, the scorpion tells the frog, "Oh no, I won't sting because that would kill me." They get in the middle, and the damn scorpion stings the frog. The frog asks him, "Why'd you do that?" He says, "It's my nature." And it's the nature of capitalism to reduce employees as much as possible. And so what's happened in the United States, what happened in England first and happened in the United States, is they've exported the jobs to cheaper labor markets, but they defunded the local industries, and things like the mom and pop stores, the number of employee middle management. But with all of the consolidations, they get rid of all the middle managers. So when you call to make a complaint, there's nobody there to talk to, because they're only interested if it affects billions of dollars. The CEO is not interested in some little problem you have with the store and how, where you're going to go anyway. But the reverse happens too. Walmart is closing stores. There's a huge problem in the commercial real estate business because of the things I've said and the fact that people are doing much more online. People are working at home. But all of this 9/11 stuff, 9/11 was the cornerstone for the military-industrial complex. I don't know if you saw the movie or read the book a long time ago, The Russia House. In The Russia House, John LeCaire points out that even if the Soviet nuclear arsenal was a phantom, nobody in the Congress or the spy agencies would allow that information to come out because it would defund their business. As Nietzsche said so long ago, beware a man who makes his living fighting an enemy, for he has a vital interest in keeping that enemy alive. And so even after the collapse of the Soviet Union, etc., they had to come up with some sort of reason to keep this going, and terrorism was that reason. So the entire military-industrial complex, Israel, various other countries, the UK, of course, makes huge money off of armaments, far more disproportionate to its population, and even the Soviets. I mean, Putin had his twin towers in Chechnya. And there's actually an interesting movie about that called The Fourth Building. And it's what they were really trying to say was the Fourth Estate, but they translated it wrong, and it's The Fourth Building. But it's about the press and how the press is taken over by the powers that be, and how this was what's happened there. Anyway, so, I mean... Putin uses terrorism, so he's happy to jump on the bandwagon. And what I believe has happened is that with the collapse of the Soviet Union, they decided that we'll continue doing the proxy war thing, that the U.S. and Russia will never go to war directly, or China now, but they'll fight these proxy wars. Now, so far, China stayed out of that. But in Russia, Putin was a grand chess master. As long as his military was weak, he kept retreating. Now that he's got his military back up to speed, he's no longer retreating. And the U.S. realizes this. The thing about a shooting war between the big powers is your industrial base is decimated. And it won't be like World War II. The Russians can reach the United States. So despite all the, well, not in spite of, the cause of all the hype is that the nuclear arms industry and the people who make the delivery systems want more business. And so they're pumping this thing up. And terror, again, keeps them in power. I mean, if Putin couldn't say that the United States was a threat, then he couldn't get the people to spend the money on his weapons industry. And he is a weapon industry. He has moguls in the weapon industry as well who want to make money. The entire Congress, you know, there's 9,000 bills a year introduced in the United States Congress. Well, let's just be generous and say 4,500 of them are junk. That's 4,500 bills, important bills, or relatively important bills, that had to be written and read by it, or should have been, by every congressman and senator. They don't read 4,500 bills. Give me a break. Who wrote them? They didn't write them. They were written by the various industries and special interest groups. So they vote like they're told. I know the Italian minister from Italy, that's kind of redundant, the Italian minister who is a representative in the EU, and he was joking about voting. He said they call it yes day. They go in, they call out the number, and people raise their hands, yes, because that's what they're told to do. the not only is the president a puppet, all of these other peoples are puppets too, and they have no idea what they're doing. Maybe they'll pick out a few signature bills to go, but mainly it's to get their names in the newspaper and the media to be reelected. So 9/11 is far more important in a way, I don't want to say in all ways, than the Kennedy assassination. The Kennedy assassination didn't lay the groundwork for wars and expansion of terrorism. I think the Kennedy assassination made sure that no future president would ever step out of line. I mean, I imagine them coming up to any president who's starting to get out of line and showing him the tapes and saying, "You want to die?" That's what
You know, one of the biggest problems I feel is that a lot of people in 2016 simply do not fathom how their own government could be involved in such a horrendous crime against their own people. What would you say to those folks that are still living in denial?
Well, you know the famous line, denial is not just a river in Egypt. But again, I think kind of touched on earlier, they don't want to believe. They don't want to believe this stuff, and so they turn their minds off. Famous Paul Simon song, "A man hears what he wants to hear and disregards the rest." Again, if they really believe this, they really have to go out and do something. Secondly, look at all the people we've elected who were supposed to do stuff that didn't. Obama, hell, Richard Nixon got elected twice running against the Vietnam War. And every time he got elected again, he upped the goddamn ante in Vietnam. Obama said, "Oh, we're going to get our troops out, no more wars." First thing he does, he puts more boots on the ground in Afghanistan and starts two more wars. Or three or four, take your choice. So the people don't want to believe this. To say that, there's a segment of the population, a lot of people, who want to say, "I am an American and I'm proud of America." And if we say that stuff, then they can't be proud of America. So they're attacking themselves in a sense. And people don't like to admit they're wrong. If they came out and said, "Gee, all of a sudden that we're wrong," then it becomes a cognitive, well, it's not really cognitive, but it becomes something that they don't want to admit. And two, they would rather drink their beer, watch the football, basketball, baseball, whatever games, watch the fashion shows and drink their wine and their women and their girl movies, and the guys want their guy movies, and they're all pandering to the lowest common denominator. In people and fostering. I mean, you know, you look at the guy movies, and all of them have people solving things through violence. They admit that the government is worthless. They play on our desire to be rebels, which is kind of in the American culture. On one side, in the news side, they're telling that group of people, "Hey, don't worry about it. It can't be. The government wouldn't do it. Somebody would have spoken." Oh, by the way, here's a really good one on that. When people tell you, "Hey, somebody would have told us about it," by that, somebody would have, one of the perpetrators would have broken cover and told us. In the 50s in South Korea, the South Koreans rounded up 50,000 people who were opposed to them and mass executed them and buried them in a mass grave. And the information did not come out until 3 years ago. So
wow.
Somebody would have said something about it. Don't believe them. Look at all the CIA operations that nobody's heard about.
Well, please do stick with us, Mr. Walter. We'll be right back. This is the People Who Speak radio show. I'm your host, Steve Johnson, talking with special guest Mr. Jimmy Walter, live on Internet Radio. And we will be right back with our guest and audience questions after this short message break.
Hi, I'm Richard Valzer. This is the great BBS Radio.
With over 150 million registered users, Pal Talk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 Pal Talk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining Pal Talk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
Today's school libraries are filled with endless opportunities. With access to print and digital materials, the latest technologies, and the guidance of a school librarian, our children are empowered with the tools they need to succeed in school and beyond. I'm Julianne Moore. Join me in celebrating all of the ways that school libraries and librarians are transforming learning for our students. For more information on how you can become involved, visit the American Association of School Librarians at aasl.org.
You're listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on BBS Radio.
This land is your land.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak. Every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern, on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
You're listening to the People Who Speak radio show, coming to you live across America and across the world in real time. I'm your host, Steve Johnson, and we're back tonight with a very special guest. He's a former millionaire and 9/11 truther devoted to awakening the masses. Thanks so much for staying awake in your time zone, and welcome back there, Mr. Jimmy Walter, sir.
Thank you, Steve. It's a pleasure to be here, and I appreciate all the work you do.
Oh, my gosh. Honestly, I'm very humbled you say that. We do have a caller in. I do believe it's Mr. Rob from Hawaii. Are you there, Rob? Go ahead with your question.
Yes, I am, Steve. Nice to be on with Jimmy. Appreciate him getting up at this early hour. I'm probably almost a 12-hour time zone from him, I think 11 at the moment. Anyway, Jimmy, I just had a quick couple of thoughts for you and wondered what your thoughts were on it. I do appreciate you doing this and all what you've done, and particularly because people like your father seem to be from a bygone era of like Henry Ford industrialists who loved America and actually wanted Americans to do well. Unfortunately, I think we're now in an era of globalists and people who really don't care if Americans do well. I'd like your thoughts on that. My ex-father-in-law actually used to run a division for your late father, Launch Diamond Centers. So, our family has a connection to you guys. And I'm sure Pat McKay appreciated all the employment he got from your father. But my thing is the chance we have here of Donald Trump, somebody who also seems to have pride in America, and is he a bit of a throwback to the era of your father? And do we have a chance with him mentioning things about the 28 pages and Building 7 falling down on its own? And can you possibly get through to Mr. Trump and see if he can push the agenda through that's close to your heart and close to my heart as well, in exposing what really happened on 9/11? So thanks for your answer.
Well, my pleasure. First of all, I do remember that division of my father's company, and I think I met your father once at one of the meetings. I went to a lot of them when I actually worked there. Two, I think my father was definitely an American, supported America, and would not be like these internationalists. What happened is the financiers, the finance people, rather than the industrialists, get control of these industries. They did it first to England. They exported all the manufacturing jobs in England because the workers wanted more money, and when there's full employment, they could get it. So they say, well, we can't have full employment. We're going to go elsewhere. And the whole point behind the Fed is that if we do have full employment, i.e. wages start to rise, then they raise interest rates and shut down the industries. So it's a combination of the Fed and this exporting of industries to other countries under the term free trade, how it's going to make us all better. Well, it doesn't make us all better. It may help the other people in the other country, but the minute they start wanting higher wages, then they move the factories to another country where the people aren't making any money. Now, Donald Trump. Donald Trump is particularly thorny to me. Well, first of all, he doesn't need me to go to him and talk to him. And two, he wouldn't listen to me in the first place. He only listens to himself. And he has this dance he's doing. I looked at video clips of him, and when people were talking about the collapse of the towers, I saw him on film say, hey, get away from me, you conspiracy theorists. I'm not going there. His latest thing with Jeb Bush, which is quite right, is that George W. Bush either let it happen on purpose or was incompetent. And they tried to turn that by Jeb saying, how can you attack my family? But at any rate, if Hillary's elected, it's definitely going to be business as usual. If Trump's elected, how will they handle him? I don't know. Remember this, like I said before, just in congressional bills, there are 9,000 per year. The day he enters office, he has to appoint 9,000 judges. These gargantuan lists, I mean, maybe not gargantuan in the terms of millions, but these lists of things that the president is responsible for is so huge, so unimaginable, that the president really doesn't have much chance to really make an extensive change to the government. And then two, in this country, even today, the president is not a dictator. Now, since Bush, they have expanded these executive orders, they've had these signing annotations where they say, well, I have to sign the bill, but we're not going to do this part. So the president has become more and more imperial. But again, the president has only so much time, and part of that time has to be spent getting reelected. He's more of a glorified public relations guy than a guy that can actually do anything. Now, a lot of things Trump says are very dangerous. And so that makes me have a pause. On the other hand, I wouldn't mind seeing the whole damn establishment get shaken up if he could actually do it. But even Trump has said campaigning is not the same thing as running, and that after he gets into office, it's going to be different than all of the rancor and rabble-rousing. I'm going to call it rabble-rousing. I mean, I'd be quite true. It's more like rich-rousing statements he's making. My basic opinion is all of the people that you see are marionettes, puppets, controlled by the people behind. Okay? Am I still here? Steve? Anybody? Hello?
Yes, sir, right here. Thanks very much, Rob, for that very good question, and thank you, Mr. Walter, for the answer. We have a question from Winston Smith in Hawaii. Mr. Walter, would you support legal actions against NIST for tampering with public records?
Of course I would. But the problem is the courts. Just remember this. It doesn't matter what's written down. The law is what the judge says the law is. And take the New York City petitions. There were so many of them. And every time, a judge threw them out. This is ridiculous. There's a current movie out called Bridge of Spies. And in it, the chief lawyer who is defending this guy, who is a spy, but the government screwed up on legal process. I mean, it was a clear screw up. The case should have been thrown out, or at least most of the evidence. But the judge said, hey, this guy's a spy. I'm not throwing out the evidence. The Supreme Court backed him up. I call them the Supreme Kangaroos, especially after the George W. Bush election, where they jumped from one side to not interfering to the other side, but stopping a recount. So in my opinion, no legal case is ever going to be successful.
Right, right. We have a question from Carol in Australia. She asks, do you believe 19 Muslim hijackers were responsible for hijacking the planes?
Well, I mean, even the mainstream media had interviews with the alleged hijackers who were still alive. They won't produce the videos from all the video cameras in the airports of them getting on the plane. The 19 hijackers is a fiction. They weren't even devout Muslims. They were doing cocaine and chasing women. They couldn't fly the airplanes at the ground school. No, I do not believe.
You know, that sounds almost Israeli to me, that they were in strip clubs and doing cocaine. That sounds very Israeli to me, to be honest.
Well, I think there's plenty of non-Israelis that do that as well. The Israeli connection to me is not there. The Israeli connection to me, of course, is Silverstein and Netanyahu's close personal connection. Silverstein taking out the
insurance.
Insurance beforehand. The dancing Israelis dressed as Arabs. Israel's, you know, they say one of the sayings is follow the money, but the other one is the more ancient one. My Latin's terrible. Cua bono, who benefits?
Mm-hmm.
And Israel.
Exactly.
Was the biggest benefactor. But I do not believe Israel did it alone, as some people want to say. It was like a float your boat thing. And it's similar to the Kennedy assassination. Who benefited? The military benefited. The CIA benefited. The military industrial complex benefited. The city of New York benefited because they were going to have to tear down those two buildings because of the asbestos at a cost of $1 billion.
Yes, sir. The Port Authority benefited. The ADL benefited. So many other groups benefited and made off, made big.
Made off very big. And so in politics, they have the term float the boat. That means we got to get a lot of support from different people to float the boat. To get the thing done. And so that, in my opinion, is Israel, of course, is a major player and a major benefactor. But if you go back to Kennedy and the Kennedy assassination, we had the ex-head of the CIA. We had Johnson, who was going to be dropped. We had the Fed, who was going to be disbanded. We had the Vietnam War that was going to be stopped. We had the mafia, who had been screwed by the Kennedys against what their father had promised them in Chicago. We had the Cubans who were pissed off about the Bay of Pigs. And so they floated the boat. They got it all together and they got it done. And also, don't forget this too, in the mainstream media, they benefit for every war. You know, if nothing is happening, people don't read the newspapers, people don't watch the shows. But the minute you have a war going on, everybody's watching the news, their advertising revenue goes up. So when people want to be purists and stuff like that, but there are so many people who benefited. Oh, and let's take the insurance. On the insurance on the buildings of the World Trade Center. Not people many mentioned this. Silverstein took out the insurance, okay, and they paid him. They could have come up with all of this stuff, and they didn't. And the reason they paid him was then they had an excuse to raise rates and sell more insurance when they knew it was never going to happen again. So using calling the attacks a terrorist attacks they were able to increase their profits overall by making what is relatively a small payout to Larry Silverstein.
Wow. Wow. And everybody benefited, including the insurance companies. We have a question from Reginald Thornswipe in Wembley, who asks, do you believe there is an Agenda 21 to kill off the world's population, and why do you believe that?
Well, I'm not familiar with the exact document you're talking about, but yes. Okay. First of all, we'll talk about population growth. It is a known, proven fact that as people become wealthier, they stop having kids. It's reached a point in Europe, Western Europe, in the United States, where the native populations are declining. So the population explosion per se is not a problem if everybody becomes wealthier. Now, if they don't become wealthier, then, of course, they're going to keep having more kids because kids to the poor are an economic asset. They go out, they earn money and bring it back and don't get any more themselves individually than if they didn't work. So poor people are the biggest supporters of child labor. All right, now, back to the wealth thing. Now, if the existing population, forget population growth, if the existing population gets wealthier, that means they consume more. And so that means the share of any individual country in the West of the ruling elite becomes less and less. Two, you have these, I'm going to call them radical eco-conservatives, who want to keep Africa as a hunting ground, as their outdoor zoo where they get to go and hunt and stuff or see whatever. They want to keep the rainforest, whatever. But the people who actually live there, who aren't making enough money, who can make more money by destroying these things, by making them like the United States has made itself, are not going to sit around. So third point, why did Bill Gates build a nuclear-proof bomb shelter in the North Atlantic? I mean, this really sucks as far as I'm concerned. It's suspicious. There was a, I think the Prince of Wales said, I'm going to come back as a virus and kill off all but 500,000 people. These people look at the third world getting wealthier as a threat to them, as to their way of life, to their group. And the global warming thing, let's not argue about if it's true or not. Let's argue about what the effect is of putting those carbon controls in place. And the effect of putting those carbon controls in place is going to be to stop the modernization of the third world and to decimate even further the wealth of the lower people in the economic sense in the first world. So all of these things point to me that, you know, we're going to have problems. I mean, if you look at the actual world's, not demographics, but arable land things, there's plenty of arable land. Now, some of it's at very difficult places, but there's more than enough arable land to feed a lot more people. What there's not a lot more of is oil, rare earth minerals, and natural resources like that. So in my and these viruses that keep popping up.
John Lennon was once asked, do you think there's an overpopulation problem? And he says, no, there's not an overpopulation problem. There is a distribution of resource problem. And that seems to be the sum of it.
Well, he's right. But you have to do the extensions. In other words, if everybody in the world had a car, had all the stuff Americans and Western Europeans have, there aren't enough natural resources to do that. That's the problem. Forget the food, all right? And we do have a distribution problem.
We do have a question. We do have a question here from Baroness Elizabeth Fairfield of Chesterfield, who asks, has Mr. Walter ever heard of Operation Northwoods, and can he explain that?
Of course. I mean, this is documented fact. You know, they say, oh, conspiracy theorists, that's all bullshit. But Northwood is the poster child of the conspiracy theory, where they were going to blow up, fake blowing up a plane with alleged college students on it, but were actually CIA people, landed, kill people in Miami and blame it on the Cubans to start a war. All five of the Joint Chiefs of Staff signed off on it, and either Rumsfeld, who was the Secretary of State under...
Lemnitzer. General Lemnitzer, is that the one?
Well, no, he was the chief who signed off on it. But it was rejected by Kennedy's Department of Defense minister, or Kennedy himself.
Yeah, right.
Name's escaping me right now. So anyway, Northwoods is the poster child. Yes, I've definitely heard of it.
Wow. Have you heard? We got a question from Reggie in Maryland. Mr. Walter, do you think they lied to us about Osama bin Laden just as they lied to us about Jessica Lynch and Pat Tillman?
Of course they lied to us. Look at all the pictures they put out of Osama bin Laden that didn't even look like Osama bin Laden. And I originally I was pretty sure that Osama bin Laden had been killed or died of natural causes early on. The thing about capturing him is, of course, full of holes, and shooting him and dumping a body at sea. So what happened was, I don't know if you've ever read the book, or he read the book, 1984, and that they have this guy, Emmanuel Goldstein, who is the head of a terrorist organization that they never catch and never dies.
And yes, of course. Yeah.
And so Osama bin Laden was the current Emmanuel Goldstein. Again, you have to keep your enemy alive if you want to keep your funding. Hello.
Yes, we do have a question here from Bon Jammy in Ohio. He asks, in your opinion, is planet Earth one big slave plantation?
Well, slave is a difficult concept here. Are we indentured servants? Probably. Remember this, that after the Civil War, many of the Southern plantation owners liked it. Before the Civil War, these slaves were their property, and you take care of your own property. After the Civil War, if they died or didn't have a beat, that was their tough luck, because they could go out and get somebody else to replace them. So the people became, the slaves went from being valuable assets to expendable. So that's what we are now. We're worse than slaves. We're expendable.
Wow. We have a final question, Mr. Walter. We're running out of time, unfortunately. Now, do you support the stop funding of Israel, or better still, do you support the stop funding of war?
Well, I support both, of course. The Israel thing, it is insane that Israel, a small country across the world, controls the United States Congress.
Wow.
And war, of course, as I've been on before, is a racket, as General Smiley Butler and many other people have said. So war, again, is an excuse to take money out of social programs and put it into the pockets of the wealthy.
Thanks so much for staying up very late tonight, Mr. Jimmy Walter, sir. One last thing. Do you have any plans to write any kind of book about your experiences in the United States?
Well, you brought that up before, and that might happen, but right now I have actually been inspired by a book by this fake that we talked about earlier. Why not write it as fiction, but as what really happened?
Oh, you're talking about Rebecca Roth.
Yeah. Well, she's of course is a shill, but I'm talking about if you write it as fiction, what really happened, then it might get published.
Absolutely. We're going to have you again, Mr. Walter, if that's okay, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Fantastic.
Thanks for having me.
It has been a big pleasure. You've been listening to the People Who Speak radio show with special guest Mr. Jimmy Walter. I'd like to thank him so much and remind all the listeners to visit his YouTube channel at www.youtube.com/user/1word Jimmy Walter. Thanks so much for being on the show today, Mr. Walter, sir.
Thank you, sir, and have a great day.
Indeed, you too. Have a good sleep there. Join us coming up soon on the People Speak show when I talk with former Jakarta Post editor Robert S. Finnegan and Canadian YouTuber Peter Chow. Stay tuned for those interviews coming soon. Big thanks go out to the producers Mike, Doug, and Donald, who do so much work, and to all my friends throughout the world, and all the guys who give me so much support. Thank you from the bottom of my pajamas. You can tune into my own channel on YouTube called Stop Funding Israel. But for me for now, hope you enjoyed this one just as much as I did. Take care and bye until next time.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief office, I saw my people and they stood there hungry and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land. This land.